The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well here on this hump day. Another warm one, not quite as hot as yesterday, but, you know, it is what it is here at the end of July. But we, fortunately, the AC is working just fine here in the studio. Bill and Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Adam, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Feels like I haven't seen you in like 15 years.
It's been a while. How was your trip to down to South Florida?
It was really, really good. I still am that entire area. You know, I mean, we spent a little bit of time, some friends and I, over in Clearwater, mm-hmm. and then we went to St. Pete one night, and just, they lived in Tampa proper, but to think that you could just hop 50 minutes, on the interstate and go one way to that, and then hop 50 minutes the other way, and I was very impressed with the whole area, so it was a good trip, all in all, for sure.
Yeah, you were saying, you were telling us last week, it was pretty hot down there. You get back and it's like, it's pretty much the same here.
Yeah.
Except there's unless you have somebody, a friend that's got a pool or something like that, there's not as much water available as there is down there.
Still have not checked out the pool at my new apartment complex. Man. I need to. My mom asked me that the other day. She's like, "Are you gonna get over there?" And I'm like, "I'll figure it out." So I need to figure that out because it'd be nice to get a couple of those days in before we hit the ground running next week.
It is it's really the last week. Before, I mean, it all gets started. I mean, next Tuesday, it's funny that it's still being called reporting date. It's the report date, but I mean, we'll get Alex Golish and I think some others.
I think we're getting both coordinators, I'm right.
On Tuesday, and then practice gets started Wednesday. So I mean, it's about here. I mean, as crazy as it seems, even though we're still, we're still in the month of July. Summer's basically over.
Mm-hmm. No, it's
as far as athletics is concerned.
It's fall camp, but it's never really fall camp anymore. Like that's to the point. They told us last year
it's summer camp. Yeah. I mean, that used to mean a completely different thing.
But. Yeah, they were like, don't write fall camp anymore. It's preseason practices now, and it's like, okay, good to know. Because I stand outside for 20 minutes in practice, and I'm like, this isn't the fall. I wish it was the fall, but
the good thing is I think we're going mornings again, which is so much better. I mean, first of all, I mean selfishly, if it were afternoons, I wouldn't be able to be over there mm-hmm. because they'd be practicing. But the other thing is, it is just miserable, like this time of day outside. It's not like it's chilly or anything in the morning, but it's so much more pleasant. The humidity isn't as bad, and the heat of the day doesn't hit till mid-afternoon. So it makes sense for the players, for the coaches, for the players to be able to, recharge, rest up, and be able to, in the afternoon, look back at what happened in practice as opposed to practicing in the afternoon and just being dead tired and having to crash at night.
Yeah, and I can't even imagine the returns on the hydration tests and that kind of stuff now. Like it would not look good if you were doing afternoon practices.
No kidding. All right, so media days wrapped up on Thursday. Friday we got the preseason predictions from the media, which have not normally aren't very accurate. Were there any things that you looked at and went, wow, really? Or was everything about where you expected it to be as far as the projections?
It was nice to see, and it's, I tend to think within our own network, when we do like all league teams, we usually only just do one team. So a lot of people get left on the cutting board. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's three teams with the media days, right. But it was really nice to see that Alex McPherson was in there. I wasn't sure,
Only specialist there, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
When he's healthy, Alex is as good as anybody.
Absolutely. So to see him there, that was, I don't know that I was surprised, but that was good to see. And beyond that, I wasn't shell-shocked one way or the other.
I was a little surprised that Jeremiah Cobb wasn't you know, anywhere, was even third team.
Mm-hmm. No, that's
after a nearly 1,000-yard season a year ago.
And honestly, like, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know this off the top of my head. This may be research for the break, but like, how many I know he doesn't rank in front of Kawan Lacy or Ahmad Harvey or Ahmad Hardy, but like, where does he sit in terms of returning rushing production in the SEC? I'd imagine surely top five, if not that third spot. So honestly, I had not thought much about that one, but kind of like you said, that poll every year, those all league teams, you never know what you're going to get.
No, the all league teams, and then it's still crazy that just 10 out of, you know, the media has only gone 10 for 34 in picking the conference champion. Now, a lot of times they get the teams, they'll have the teams that are going to be playing. Like last year, Georgia and Texas were picked to be in they were picked 1-2, but Texas was picked to win, and of course Georgia won.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's the other way. So, I mean, they've gotten a little bit better. I was not surprised at Auburn picked where they were, 12th.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about it a little last week before the predictions came out that, you know, with the struggles Auburn's had over the last few years and with as many big name players, more name players leaving than coming in, I can see where, you know, folks that aren't close to the program would go, well, why should they be noticeably better?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. That I wasn't necessarily shocked when I saw that. I think I saved it somewhere in my computer, but I think I voted Auburn 9th, if I'm right. You know, and some of that, I imagine for every voter, certainly hope they anticipate sort of the ebbs and flows of like a, you know, people seem really high on South Carolina this year. I'm not sure why.
Well, it's because they were really high on them last year,
right.
and they have some guys coming back from a very disappointing season last year.
Yeah, and I've just seen that story play out a few times the last couple years, so to speak. But
the thing that's interesting to me, and part of it I think can be explained in the fact that Media Days was in Tampa, and Florida is the closest SEC school there, so there are probably more Florida, you know, beat writers and people that cover Florida than any other school. But just looking at the expectations for Florida as compared to the expectations for Auburn are really interesting. I mean, I just got the feel from a lot of the folks there that they're a lot higher on Aaron Filo and Florida's quarterback play than they are Byron Brown at Auburn. And, I mean, Aaron Filo, I mean, yes, he's got his offensive coordinator with him coming from Georgia Tech, but Filo's a guy that started one game. He started it against Gardner Webb, whereas Byron Brown has started for, you know, most of 3 years.
Yeah, like Byron Brown beat Florida in Gainesville. You know, that's the one thing about that is I understand anybody who believes in like Buster Faulkner after the stuff that Georgia Tech has done the last few years, but I kind of find myself in the same boat of, you know, I just don't. I guess all you're feeding into with that is the potential of it, you know, for Filo to have another year in this system. But even then, I just don't know that there's much. I think it's best to be very even keel about that one. I don't find much reason for like tangible optimism with it, so to speak.
I don't see an awful lot of difference in the two programs right now entering this year. And what that tells me is, and I see some early lines, is people think Florida's going to come to Auburn and win. And that would be a tough loss for Auburn.
Yeah.
Because they've struggled at home over the last few years. That's the first conference game. It's the first road game of the year for Florida after they play, I think, Campbell and Florida Atlantic, I think, are their first two ball games. So you would just think that Auburn being at home on a night game, a Saturday night game, would have the advantage, but we'll see. I mean, so that's one of the critical games on the schedule. Obviously, the opener against Baylor is. I mean, you can't look past that. You absolutely can't lose one of your first two ball games and expect to have, you know, a turnaround type season, but If they do and lose to Florida, it's going to hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the Baylor thing was interesting. I managed to get to sit down and just kind of, we're doing our weekly preview, you know, it's not weekly, it's honestly twice a week now, but just going down the schedule and looking at Baylor, it's just all, it feels like the only thing you're looking at is DJ Lagway. You know, it's like how well does that pan out? And it just ultimately feels like that team is going to go as far as he can take them.
They weren't bad offensively last year. They were bad defensively last year. That's where they have to get much better. And that's what's crazy is with Dave Aranda, you would think they would be, you know, they'd be decent defensively.
Yeah, no. And so for that to just be, I just don't look at them on paper and see a convincing sort of fight, so to speak. And I mean, to be in Atlanta too, I'm excited to see an Auburn football game in Atlanta for the first time. I mean, just how close it is, you go to those basketball games.
It's going to be so lopsided as far as the fans. I mentioned a couple of days ago. Now look, I need to apologize because while we were on the air Monday, came emails about seat selection for season ticket holders for the Baylor game, folks that opted in to have Baylor as part of their season ticket package. And so I was on the air, and I read it, and I looked at it, and I thought, oh, man, I've got to make my seat selection yesterday. I thought it was like Tuesday yesterday. I looked at it when I got home, and no, it's next Tuesday.
Okay.
But I'm a little concerned because my seat selection time – is at 10:45, and I've got a feeling we may be busy at 10:45 next Tuesday. I don't know when we're going to get Alex Golish and assistants, but I don't want to be penalized that. But anyway, the note on the email said that Auburn had been allotted 20,765 seats or something like that, but the demand was over 50,000, and they were going to be filled. So that tells you that Auburn's going to have that many folks there at Mercedes-Benz, while Baylor was allotted 3,000 tickets.
Okay.
So it's going to be tremendously, you know, orange and blue.
Right. And that's just I don't know. I've always been impressed with the basketball games at State Farm. Like every time it feels like I don't know what it is, but it's to see that travel, even though it's just up the road. To see it on a football scale, I'm really looking forward to that. But I, you know, the more intriguing one to me of these first three, just because I feel like there is nothing to really know about them, is Southern Miss.
Right. Oh, you're right there.
You know, I because I was reading up on them.
They've
yesterday.
They've got a new coach too.
Right. So. After this is their third coach in 3 years, you know, I did not realize that Charles Huff was a 1 year like turnaround and already bounced to Memphis. But, you know, Blake Anderson had a ton of success in that Arkansas State pipeline. And, you know, I forget exactly what happened at Utah State. I know it was a lot of off the field stuff that didn't end well. But to see him already popping back up as a head coach, I'm curious what that team will look like because I think they're really starting from scratch everywhere. Like new coordinators, they lost their quarterback from last year, and that was like their only offensive success. So that's one of the ones I'm really intrigued to see. Like what an offseason, like how much he can really pull together and turn around in an offseason.
And that's sort of the way college football and college athletics is now. I mean, you have so many teams that you just don't know because now the ability to either gain or lose, you know, so much of your roster every year.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like I think their most notable transfer was a D2 guy, like a D2 wideout, you know? And like once you get down to that level, that's the one that always fascinates me with the turnover because it's these guys have to go dig for these gems, you know? They're not
right.
Southern Miss wasn't buying for Cam Coleman, right?
No.
So, you know, what did they find and what sort of surprises will that have? I imagine that'll be a pretty convincing Auburn victory, but you never know, right?
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's why you've got to play them. And I said it a little earlier today on a show. It's like, I mean, it's cliche as can be, but you got to play them. You got to take them a game at a time because if you, you stub your toe in one of those, then it's going to be really tough to try to make it up as you head into the season. We're just underway here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Adam, love for you to join in. You can call us on The Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio. Drew is at the controls. Adam, I was saying when I first came in that it's the last week and it'll be good next week when there's actual practice, some concrete things to talk about, because it's either projections, predictions, whatever, guessing, or the off-field news. And couple of things that have gone on here over the last couple of days. Big news coming out from Ohio State and Notre Dame, and not surprisingly, look, everyone is always looking for more sources of revenue, and Ohio State and Notre Dame have hit big on the patches on the uniforms. Mm-hmm. I think Ohio State's got J.P. Morgan,
okay,
which is going to bring them a reported $17 million.
Man.
Whereas Notre Dame will be sporting a SoFi patch,
okay,
which will get them somewhere in the $18 to $20 million range. So that's the next thing. And I see some people that are just really upset about this. That to me is I have less problem with that than I do an awful lot of things that have happened with the changes in college athletics over the last few years.
And I mean, that is something that has existed in sports I think a lot longer than certainly I would imagine many like American sports watchers realize, because I know it's always been a big thing with soccer. But just to see it now, it feels like such a non-issue. The one thing that I saw with the jersey patches getting unveiled yesterday, BYU unveiled one. Do you want to guess who the sponsor was?
Somebody mentioned it. I forget who it was.
BYU.
Okay.
The university. Like, they just, you know.
Well,
and I mean,
that's nice.
You know, I don't know how much money the Mormon Church has, but they obviously have that backing. But it was just one of those things where you saw, I couldn't remember if it was J.P. Morgan or Chase with Ohio State. And then I did, you know, SoFi, and then it's like, okay, the school itself, it's just that one made me giggle. But I don't know, like I'm in the same boat as you. I don't take any issue with that. If anything, it's probably one of the more, if not most, ethical ways to drive that revenue.
Absolutely. I mean, now don't get me wrong, I mean, I don't particularly want uniforms to look like NASCAR uniforms. And I think that's what some people are afraid, that it's just you'll have a tough time finding the school's logo with all the patches and everything that are on uniforms and helmets and gear and whatever.
One of my hot takes about this is that I think even the offbeat patches sometimes, like, they can really just be an additional touch to the jersey that you wouldn't even fathom being a good thing. Like when the MLB started doing it, that was just last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Royals have a Quick Trip patch, and you know, we lived in Kansas City when I was growing up for about 2 years, and it's just, they are on every single block. Whenever I think about Kansas City, I do think about Quick Trip somewhere in there. It's probably not the first thought, but
is it like, is that like a 7-Eleven or
pretty much. And I forget, I think they started in Oklahoma, but it's like, you know, that area, Arizona, I think there's one in Opelika now, actually.
Wow. Okay.
Right by the exit, but they've got it on the sleeve, and you know, the Royals aren't, the Quick Trip colors are red and black, and it's like, that's not the Royals at all, but
no,
it just
no kidding.
Looks, I'm like, yeah, like that fits. That looks right on, even though it's not the team colors. So, you know, I wonder what the other ones will look like as people start unveiling them. I wonder how soon we're going to see a Yellowwood patch on the Auburn jerseys.
Well, seems like I heard that somebody in the SEC had already had one. Maybe Mississippi State. But yeah, I was wondering, yeah, what it would be, what different schools would be. I did see where Regions Bank said they would not be doing it because they didn't want to look like they were showing favoritism toward any school, since they sponsor, I think, basically every school in the conference.
Yeah, no, that's honestly, I had not thought about that sort of viewpoint of it.
Oh, but, because you're gonna have some fan bases that if their arch rival has a patch on their jersey, they'll stop you know spending money with whoever that is.
Man, it just means more. But no, I'm like, who do you think? My immediate thought is Yellowwood, but like, who would be on that short list for Auburn?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing everybody says is, well, when's Tim Cook gonna put Apple on something? I don't know. I don't know that's about to happen. That's a really good question. I mean, because so many of the big sponsors, other than Yellowwood, sponsor other schools,
right?
But yeah, Yellowwood, you would think. I mean, Jimmy Rain is.
It's pretty synonymous
trustee.
At this point.
He's an Auburn man. There's no doubt about that.
I think like my issue with it is, like you said, I mean the jersey patch money, like sponsors. I don't know that my mind automatically gravitates towards them, but like I go to what I see around all the time, and it's like you think about like Guthrie's wouldn't have
you
that
wouldn't think
kind
they've
of money.
Got that kind of money. Although, I mean, I wonder what they could do in lieu of a patch. If a patch is $15 million, is there, you know, something that could be, you know, a million or two that you could get? I don't know.
Putting a red G on the back of the helmet for Guthrie's. No, but that's, I don't know. I'm very interested to see. It's got to be more of a when than an if, but like when Auburn gets into that.
Absolutely. I think you have to be looking for those types of opportunities now.
And I will say too, to my point earlier about the red and black Quick Trip patch on the Royals, you know, white and blue jerseys, like I think that Yellowwood logo, you just right up there on the shoulder or the chest,
oh,
I guess.
It'll look great on the blue or the white.
It would just fit right in there, you know? So, but no, I did see, like, I saw it was Ohio State and Notre Dame I first saw, and then later last night I was just scrolling and it was like, oh, BYU can just fund the entire patch themselves, I guess.
Well, just, pass the collection plate, you know, one more time.
Yeah, why not?
For athletics. Which is what everybody's trying to do. Also, the other thing that I knew was going to happen. We saw it first last week when word came out that Keyshawn Hall and a couple of other players in Ohio had won a temporary injunction seeking that fifth year when the NCAA decided that they would start and would not grandfather in players who had played 4 years in. Played 4 years and had not redshirted, not giving them that extra year. You knew that was coming, but now we're seeing football players. Mm-hmm. And I mean, here we are basically on the eve of preseason camp, and you have football players trying to, come back and gain that fifth year of eligibility. And I'm just wondering, you know, where are they going to fall? I'm sure there's some schools that have spots and could use them, but I just, just think of how many players there were a year ago, and I would imagine a pretty good percentage would like the opportunity to play another year if they know they're not going to be able to move on to the professional ranks.
Yeah, and I wonder too, especially with football, like I wonder how much it happens where maybe these guys go and seek this sort of thing out because they know like there's going to be a spot for them, so to speak, somewhere at least. I just think about when Steve Sarkisian got on the lectern in Tampa last week. I forget the name of the player, but there's an offensive lineman they have who's been, you know, granted that, and if I'm right, went through the draft process and everything.
Yeah, Missouri's got it. I saw a story yesterday on a Missouri defensive lineman who was invited to camp with a couple of teams, didn't make it, and now wants that fifth year.
Yeah, I'm still I don't know where my heart settles on all of it.
I don't have a problem with the players having been grandfathered in. I was a little surprised the NCAA just didn't, when they announced it, say, all right, here it is, and anyone who had a who would have had a fifth year last year can be granted that fifth year.
Yeah.
That would have been fine. But my feeling is when you're making yourself when you're making yourself available or trying out at a pro camp, I think that probably should do it. You've done something that in the past means you're foregoing the rest of your eligibility.
Yeah, and I think like it should be that cut and dry. I think the reason I ever get hesitant is, you know, admittedly I have not looked at the specifics of like, you know, some of these kids, like the Texas kid, and you know, I know Keyshawn Halls well enough to know he went through that draft process and there are standards and guidelines. I think my brain, I think about like the way the baseball process works a little bit.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And that one, I mean, to me, it's just simple enough. You know, it's like, okay, you don't sign. If you've got that eligibility, you can you can come on back. And I don't think that's the end of the world. But yeah, I just, it feels like ever since, I mean, not even Betty Yacko, was it? James Nagy was the first one, I think, at Baylor. It just feels like everybody, we're splitting every hair possible and trying to find this you know, this explanation at whatever cost for getting this extra eligibility. And I'm worried, I guess, about the harm long term that that's
well, I mean, I the simplest thing would be for the NCAA just to say, okay, we're sticking with the 5 for 5. It's 5 for 5. If you opt to go through a draft and you're either not drafted or things don't work out, okay, you can come back. But there needs to be time enough for the school where he's been or other schools to be able to understand that, you know, they can make roster adjustments to be able to do that. I mean, that's one of the problems you have. I mean, you know, with Keyshawn, I mean, Auburn's roster is set with the Missouri defensive lineman. Missouri isn't apparently interested in bringing him back, but I'm sure there are some places that would be. So, I mean, that could be good for the schools on down the line, like you were talking about the situation with Southern Miss. I mean, they may be able to pick up a few players like that. And boy, that's something that would be crazy. It's crazy enough not really knowing teams because of the roster turnover that there is. But now imagine, who knows, dozens at least, and maybe hundreds, but dozens of players that are all of a sudden available. And, you know, I don't know how many SEC schools would be jumping to pick them up because they've been going through all their summer workouts and everything, getting prepared. I mean, maybe, but I doubt that these are going to be super, super high profile players.
Especially with football. That's just right. Like one of those things where I don't know.
I mean, basketball, you've got a little bit of time to try to see how things work out. Football, it's like you need these guys like next week.
Like, I'm not going to be surprised at all if we see Keyshawn Hall pop up at, I mean, really, like, I think about Kentucky and LSU, you know, and just all the stuff that went on this offseason with their roster and what felt like a, I guess you'd say, a stagnation for Kentucky. LSU, that one felt a little different.
Oh, yeah.
Felt like we got to the end of the portal and it was like, is there really a roster here? But you're right, like, football, it's just such a, even hearing Chris Murray, I think it was, talk about preparing for like his pro day before getting his waiver to come back this year. He talked about it a little bit, and I think Golish even said it at one point that, like, you know, draft prep, like, in shape is so much different from getting game in prep. Shape to actually play in a football game. So I wonder what the results are going to be for these guys, even though, you know, we're already clearly seeing a couple. But like you said, I don't see a way that you're going to have a really high value instant impact guy get an injunction at this point and make a huge difference this year.
The good thing is this should be just a this year deal, because from now on, everybody knows, all right, from the time you enroll, you've got 5 years. So, I mean, you may see some cases where players would do something that would normally finish their eligibility and then try to get it back. But at least you'd have an idea of when players come in, how long they have, and you could work that a whole lot better than a situation that we have right now with things popping up and practice starting next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm eager to get to a day where I'm tired of seeing judges. Like,
yeah, no kidding.
I'm tired of the word injunction.
It's enough. I just a field judge and a back judge is okay. I don't need to see courtroom judges.
I don't need to see a district in front of that word anymore.
That's right. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love to hear from you. Anything on your mind, sports wise? 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. I see that Wisconsin has a jersey patch sponsor.
Okay.
And it perfect sense. Culver's.
There we go. See, like that's... Yeah. That's when I think about the jersey patch. Yeah. I'm like, that's perfect.
Yeah. So we will see it. Everybody, you're going to be left out if you don't have one. I mean, if your team doesn't have one, they will be at a disadvantage because everybody's looking and that is a very, very, good idea, I think, for a revenue stream. All right, I wanted to talk a little basketball. You were down in Tampa. I had a chance to go to the pre-ambush, if you will, with Alex Golish and Stephen Pearl and John Cohen. Auburn basketball getting ready next week just to head to Greece. What a great trip that should be, and a couple of ball games, one of them against the Serbian pro team. I think they play next weekend.
Mm-hmm. I know at least one, but I thought both were against. I'm not sure.
Well, maybe they are.
But either way, I mean, you're playing. I just immediately think of, they're playing Filip Jovic's old team.
Yeah, how about that?
So that'll be, that should be a good test because Mega Basket, year in, year out, they're usually viewed as one of the better, teams, organizations, in the Euro leagues, So that should be a really good test for these guys, especially just, I feel like we always come back to the word, there's eagerness to it, but I think fascination too with just seeing all of this come together because you saw it on paper, but then to hear Stephen Pearl talk about it in Tampa last week, just the size of this team, I'm really interested to see how the size makes an impact in the, I guess for a guy like me who's not super basketball X's and O's, I say the non-traditional sense. I'm excited to see Narcisse Nagoya and Buke Aboye, but you've got a 6'8" three-point shooter in Adam Olson who sounds like he's going to try to do his best to play anywhere from the 2 to the 4 if they need him. Thomas Dowd, he's listed at 6'8", but just seems to be an absolute menace on the boards. They've got size and length in so many ways that they did not have it last year. And I didn't even mention Montas, he's the one I'm excited to see most because he just keeps getting comparisons to Chad Baker Mazzara.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, there's no way you play exactly like Chad. So
No. But I mean, he's another lefty who is a really, really good shooter, excellent ball handler, very athletic. I guess Steven mentioned that Owen Freeman had been out with a foot.
It was a foot. And I think he said it was more of a precautionary thing. Mm-hmm. My understanding is I think he's going to be playing in Greece. So, should have him hopefully at full health. I imagine you wouldn't run him out there if he wasn't.
No, there's no reason to.
But that's a whole other element of this size thing.
He's another 6'10 guy that, before he went to Creighton, when he was healthy, he was one of the better players in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think he was Big Ten Rookie of the Year.
He was.
They call it that by name for some reason. Everybody else is a freshman of the year, but
you can do that. That way you can allow players who transfer in.
There we go.
To be, that first year player, whether they're not a freshman.
Okay. I just had not seen rookie. That was the first time I'd seen it used, I guess, but that's to your point. Yeah. I guess there's a reason there's a newcomer of the year in a lot of these categories, but yeah, he was one of the most coveted players in the portal when he picked Creighton, and then it was just this injury bug. So if you can get him back at full health.
Of course, it was a knee. So that's the good thing is it's not the knee again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's to get him at full health and throw him into that mix just adds to it. And the other one, too, that's been mentioned, I know at least once, if not a couple times, but it sounds like Caleb Williams is really not just another freshman.
He's making an impact as a true freshman.
Which that you know, you think about the last guy who really came in and did that in a big way. And, you know, obviously, like, Sebastian, I think, had a pretty big role last year. But I just always, I think about Tejade, you know, and the, and the role he played a couple of years before. But just very, very excited to see it all put together and going up against competition that, you know, isn't their own, so to speak.
And I mean, there's no way. I mean, this should be a great opportunity. I know Steven has really been, you know, wanting them to bond and to build the chemistry. And there's no better way to do that than a trip to Greece, I can't imagine.
Absolutely. I can't think of many other places I'd want to spend.
Man,
like,
no kidding.
A couple weeks before my fall semester.
Yeah, I'd, you know, that would be a great opportunity. I wonder how many diehard, hardcore Auburn fans are gonna make that trip. If I could, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, if I could get a flight, reimbursed, I wouldn't mind going myself.
Isn't that where they're?
I think so. Yeah, which is just should be beautiful. You know, just saw the Odyssey too, so that's
wasn't that good?
Yeah, it lived up to the name. Like I walked out of there and my first thought was, as impressed as I was with it was like, I need to watch this movie again because I did not digest everything. That too, I should probably do that. that might be the best choice.
It's funny. I mentioned it on Monday that we went Sunday and coming out there were a few guys, college age guys coming out, and they were talking about, man, what a story and twists and turns and being surprised at it. And one of them was like, yeah, something about the writer, and it's like, this book's been out for a little while. I don't know. I guess you didn't study it, but no. I thought it was really well done. I mean, because it is a massive. That was a massive undertaking back in the day, and I enjoyed reading it and everything. But I mean, yeah, I thought they did a really good job.
And I don't know, reading up on a lot of the practical effects that, you know, kind of Christopher Nolan used, like the giant that was just that was a puppet, you know, and they like hiked it up to a cave and things like that. But no, I was really impressed with it. And I hope for Auburn's sake they avoid any giant and troll caves when they're in the
Yeah, I hope so.
You know, I think they should be safe in a lot of those regards. I don't think they'll have to worry about any Odysseus level problems, but should be just a super exciting opportunity, especially again, I mean, just going up against that caliber of team, you know. I think that'll be
a very good
test.
But the opportunity to be in a place like that, to go out, that's where my younger son and his wife, that's where they honeymooned. I mean,
okay.
It's like, you know, just so,
yeah,
just the thought of, you know, being over there is so cool. And I think this would be great. This would be great for them to really, really build that chemistry before they come back. And we were talking a little while ago. I mean, we now know the full schedule.
Mm-hmm.
We've known who, and now we know the who and when. We found out just a few days ago the dates for the conference schedule, and I mean, everybody in this league is going to have a tough enough schedule. I mean, there are a couple of stretches in the conference where you go, man, this is going to be quite the challenge. But I mean, it's not last year's schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I think it's tough, but it's fair.
Yeah, and that's, you know, my immediate thought in like looking at it was, just like you said, it was like, well, this doesn't look as daunting as last year, but I just wonder, especially as non-conference goes on and as you get to the front of it, you know, what's going to happen to where you look at it and suddenly there's a stretch that pops up and you're like, that's actually a lot tougher than maybe we thought going in. But ultimately, I mean, yeah, looking at it now, the fact that you get to finish with the IBOB at home, like that's pretty nice. You know, you'll take that every time. I'm really interested for, it's the first game, but I'm interested for that A&M game. You know, they're heading to College Station, but just after all the drama of last year, what is that? Is there going to be any added intensity to that matchup, I wonder? Especially because I'd imagine that A&M team's going to look, you know, even a step up in terms
of
improvement.
You would think, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're going to have two teams that look that way in their own ways. But I wonder if anything is bubbling or brewing under the surface in terms of a little more dynamic of a rivalry there than just the years past of Buzz Williams always having Bruce Pearl's number.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bucky's a, you know, an in-state product,
right?
And has never hesitated to say what he's thinking.
Exactly, exactly. Like, you've just got, I don't know, two young coaches too. I don't know, the narrative there. I'm intrigued to see how it ebbs and flows.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then we were talking during the break, and Arizona announcing officially, and we'd already heard that it was going to be November 13th, which is the night before the Mississippi State game, which is a bummer for. For fans and media,
yeah,
it's going to be tough because you got a Friday night game, Friday night big basketball game. This is as big a non-conference game as Auburn has hosted in a long, long time. And then the next morning, football is in Starkville.
Yeah, no, we'll just break out. We'll fly charter. Media will figure it out. We'll get there.
I'm saying, but there are quite a few people who are season ticket holders of football and basketball.
Yeah,
that's going to make it tough.
I wonder what we're going to see, if there's going to be any sort of, because I'm trying to think about it. I know I've seen it before where it's just like the athletic department puts together a certain level of accommodations, you know, for whether it's travel or anything else. But I wonder if there's going to be anything in that regard for like fans of, you know, hey, like, You're going to the Arizona game and then want to get over to Starkville, you know?
Maybe. Like, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. No.
That would be a good idea. And you know, might be able to use that as a little bit of a revenue producer as well.
If John Cohen, if you want to hire me on a contractual advisor basis, I don't mind doing it. But that is going to be very brutal. I haven't even seen the tip off time for that Arizona game. I just know it's late.
But it's Friday night. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not going to be a Friday afternoon game or anything. I mean, the earliest it would be 6.
Oh, man.
So that means you know, by the time you're done, it's going to be 9 before you can head out. So. I mean, like I was saying during the break, at least it's Starkville. It's not, Fayetteville or College Station or, you know, Norman or something like that the next day.
That would be impossible because I've only done the Starkville trip once, but I just remember walking away being like, I thought that'd be farther away.
And yeah.
It's
just a hop past Tuscaloosa.
Right.
I mean, really.
Right. Exactly. So it's got that going for it. But yeah, if it was, I mean, like Fayetteville, that'd be Fayetteville or Columbia, Missouri. Those would be the two where I'd be like, yeah, we're picking one or the
Somebody
other.
Somebody else is covering it.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Right.
Exactly.
All right, let's get to our final break of hour number one. Bill and Adam here on the Wednesday Drive. Again, we're wide open. Love to hear from you. Come on in.
War Eagles. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Adam Cole here in the studio. Drew at the controls. We are we're just a few days away from the Major League Baseball trading deadline, which is Monday. Some deals. There will be some deals made. Their names being mentioned. There are so many teams that I'm not sure if they're buyers or sellers right now. Adam, I was looking at it. I think they're 12 or 13 teams in Major League Baseball that are all within two games of wild card spots, not including the division leaders in the 6 divisions. So you've got 18 of the 30 teams that are within two games of a playoff spot right now.
The interesting thing, like I saw the other day, admittedly, like, going back to the Royals, was, you know, Michael Wacha and I think Seth Lugo have been floated as like, you know, lost season. Like you're a seller if anything at the deadline. But
oh, yeah.
Apparently, like even the price that they could get for those guys isn't necessarily viewed as enough to even move them. Which kind of, you know, I'm not going to complain about that. But I wonder just with. I wonder if other teams are facing that. I guess
I would think the closer it gets to the deadline, closer it gets to Monday, their value is going to go up because everybody's looking for arms.
Yeah.
Everybody's looking for pitching.
And I mean to see Tarek Skubal, you know, as like the biggest name mentioned that's the one where, you know, it'd be really cool to see him up the road in Atlanta, you know, but at the same time, a lot of people talk about Casey Mize.
I think Casey makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
A ton of sense. I mean, if you can get Tarek Skubal, absolutely you do it. He's the best pitcher in baseball. But I mean, He's going to cost you a ton. Casey's, you know, coming up on free agency.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you should be able to get him for a much more reasonable price.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, to just have that, you know, I can't remember. Like, in the time I've been here, I don't think I've seen it. But, you know, I mean, I think about Tim Hudson growing up. My first thought of him is, you know, when he was with the Giants and beating the Royals. But I always think of him with the Braves, like, honestly. And I know he wasn't there for that long, but it's just funny getting here. And it's like, okay, like, no wonder I thought of him that way. He was always from up the road.
Yeah, so that's right.
To see that again, that'd be a cool thing to see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that's going to be fun on Monday, seeing and seeing if, you know, there are more teams that go ahead and pull the trigger beforehand, because sometimes you can go ahead and get in there and get somebody before the price gets too high. All right, we'll talk about whatever in hour number two. I want to pick Adam's brain on some things that he wants to be on the lookout for when fall practice gets started and more. But, hey, we'd love to hear from you in hour number two, which is coming up here on the Wednesday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio. Drew is at the controls. Adam, just what have you got up lately there at the Advertiser? And obviously, I mean, we're counting them down. It's a week away from the start of fall football practice, and less than a week until the first, I think, media opportunity and the official reporting date.
Yeah, so we're wrapping up all the preview stuff. I think I mentioned earlier, like, the schedule preview stuff's going through right now, and right to the end of kind of positional stuff. I'm actually, the plan when I get home is to write it for the morning, but I did last year, like, who's going to be the MVC, most valuable coach, on the staff last year, and so running that back this year. And then I think the last time I was in studio, I'd mentioned trying to get something set up for like a profile series on the front office.
Right.
Got to go in, I think it was, this was yesterday morning actually, but yeah, got
four
of those interviews knocked out.
Oh, that's
so
great.
You know, not all going to be at once, but really the plan is throughout, you know, fall camp, kind of dole those out. So got to sit down with Andrew Warsaw, the GM, Alex Fagan, the director of scouting, Harding Harper, the director of recruiting, who's local guy in the sense that he played at Carver Montgomery. So
he's a cousin of Roman, I believe.
Okay, that's, and today I learned. There we go. But yeah, so talked to him, and then also talked to Jairus McIntyre for a little bit about just being an alumni, you know, he's high school and alumni relations, but being an alumni relations guy. So I'm excited to sit down and get those knocked out, and, you know, going to make a couple more calls and such for those, but I'm looking forward to those.
I'm looking forward to that too as well, because I mean, that's something that, I mean, it was unheard of just a few years ago, as you said, front office for football. I mean, there used to be, it was the head coach, and he'd had some assistants and aides and things like that. But now, no, you've got to have a GM and directors of different, you know, all different kinds of things, because you have to be tracking hundreds and hundreds of players constantly. I mean, high school and college players that could potentially enter the portal as you're always looking to upgrade your roster.
Yeah, and it was like talking to Alex yesterday. You know, his office is in, like, they've got a whole section of that building that is scouting, and you walk in, and I mean, it's very much like a war room. You know, you're like, okay, these guys are, everybody's sitting in there working at their respective spot and just kind of going. But, you know, so like seeing that was cool. I think the interesting thing too was looking at these guys and reading up a little more on them before we sat down, you look at the titles, and like, to me, the one I thought about was, you know, Harding is the director of recruiting. Right. Alex is the director of scouting. And to like sit down and get a better understanding of, okay, like just how different recruiting and scouting are you know, when you break these things down and look at them.
Well, scouting is evaluating right. and determining who you want to go after. Recruiting right. is going after and trying to obtain them.
And recruiting, too, like, it's not, you know, it is the recruits themselves, but it's, I mean, you know, I think Justin Lee, you know, he used to say this to me when I was working at the OA News, but it's like, you are always recruiting in these jobs, you know?
Oh, yes.
And it's not just the recruits, but, like, you know, breaking it down to that base carbon kind of level, it was great to sit down with all of them. I think they've all got, you know, their own very interesting and dynamic stories, but, like, it was an education on just kind of what some of this stuff looks like. So, you know, a lot of football right now, I think, is just kind of the end summation to that. And, you know, we'll have some fall camp preview stuff over the next few days, position battles, you know, a laundry list of players to watch, things like that. But, yeah, very much looking forward to this front office series.
Yeah,
for sure.
I can't wait. I'm really intrigued by this, and I haven't had a chance to meet all those guys either. I mean, and it's I know they're constantly, I mean, they're constantly working and evaluating and updating and, I mean, they have to be. And,
yeah.
And I was really impressed with how quickly, you know, that Alex Golish's staff that he brought in with him were able to target. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure they had most of them evaluated, probably knew who all these guys were. There, I would imagine there weren't an awful lot of, well, we haven't known anything about this guy before. It just may not have been someone that they would feel mm-hmm. like they'd be able to legitimately get mm-hmm. at South Florida. But that's really interesting. I'm looking forward to it. Any ideas to when, you know, when you might roll the first of that out?
I think it's going to be kind of week to week, and I think it's really going to be, I think it's starting next week is when we'll start rolling them out. And it's one of those things too, where once I kind of sit down and go through my transcripts and notes, like, there's going to be at least one story about each of them, but it, you know, there might be a couple others, you know, because it's just, like, to your point of recruiting, I wanted to talk to Andrew and Alex both about that, but by the time I just got kind of through talking to them about their story, it was like we'd been sitting there for so long that I was kind of like, okay,
yeah.
You know, maybe I'll save that one for another day. But no, they've all, I think they are all, you can understand why they're all there and in the roles that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Alex's story is really interesting. He's the director of scouting and he's 26 years old. But he's known Golish since Central Florida, like, has literally just been at the hip of this guy, and they've known each other so well that he's just, you know, as Golish has kind of gone on his ascent, you know, Alex Fagan's been right there with him. And I think, you know, I was talking to Andrew about Fagan, and he said, what did he say? He's been in the foxhole with him. And it was like, yeah, that is the perfect way to sum that up. But, you know, just getting to know each of them a little more, like, it was, I don't know, it was great. It was awesome.
Yeah, so I mean that's something really, really looking forward to that. So let everybody know how they can find that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're just looking to go straight to the source, just head to MontgomeryAdvertiser.com and click sports at the top, and whether it's a list of titles at the top or a drop down, you should see the word Auburn in there, and that'll give you everything you need. And if you're looking for me on socials, whether that's on Twitter or TikTok, just search at Cole Reporter. That's my last name, C-O-L-E, and the word reporter, and you'll be able to find me just about wherever you're looking for me.
Looking forward to that. And it's great having Adam in here on Wednesday. I wanted to ask you some of the things that you were already talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to, I don't want to be spoiler for some of the things you're writing.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, practice gets started next Wednesday. Tuesday is the reporting date. We'll get Alex Golish and probably the coordinators on Tuesday, and then we'll get an opportunity to see some of practice starting Wednesday. Look, even though it's reporting date, the guys have all been here, and they've been working out all summer. I really got the feeling from Alex Golish and the players down in Tampa that it's been a productive summer. Who are some of the players that you're really intrigued by and want to make sure you take notes on from the first day out there on Wednesday watching practice?
I think kind of to put number one in both of those categories, it's kind of in the same spot, but the offensive line to me is just, I mean, that's the big linchpin in all of this. And it feels weird to phrase it as uncertainty because I don't know that it's uncertainty.
No, it's not uncertainty, but you'd like some assuredness or confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
And the player that I've talked with everybody about. I mean, it's the first guy on my list is Stanton Ramil.
Yes, absolutely. Like if he's, you know, and I mean, that was the conversation and I guess the expectation coming out of the spring was that this is a guy who's going to be healthy, come the fall, like assuming that he's at full health and he's ready to go, whether he's on the left or the right side, I think the widely viewed projection is him being the starting left tackle. Like that is one of those things where you're immediately going to be looking at that on the first day of camp.
I mean, he has experience as a starting power four left tackle.
Right.
And that's, I mean, and he looks the part. The question with him is he healthy and can he stay healthy?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I know last year that was sort of the thing. I forget if he played in seven or maybe six games last year, but that was an issue for him. And, you know, I mean, that, you obviously, you don't want to lump an entire position group into a player to watch, but.
But if he is able to man either tackle spot, it makes the whole offensive line just sort of fall.
Absolutely.
You know, the pieces seem to fall in place.
Right. Like those dominoes fall in the way that I think we've anticipated them falling. Because you'd imagine Joe Simmons takes up the right side and then you've got, you know, probably at least one thing to figure out with the guard spots. I think Golish talked about that in Tampa, actually, that one of those was still decided. But that whole group, you know, I want to get a chance to ask them a little more about this off season for them and the camaraderie piece, as maybe cliche as that is, because, you know, Golish said that they, on their own volition, I think did community service weekly this summer. I will say, like, I live on a, you know, I think it's a 9-hole par 3, but there was one time I was going to my car a few weeks ago and there was this gaggle of guys in a cart who just all looked massive. And then one guy gets out and it's like, I saw some tattoos and I was like, is that? And it was Cole Skinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I want to know about that piece of it because I do think there's a real truth of it. And Golish said this in Tampa, but like those guys have to be in sync. They have to be able to communicate.
There's got to be chemistry on the offensive.
Right. So like what all have they done to do that? And I think too, like Cole Skinner is another guy that I'm really interested to see just with the amount of experience he's had, the fact that he's been in this offense. He was more of a platoon kind of swing guy for him last year. But like, does that experience and familiarity, I wonder if that prevails for him this fall to the point where he is in one of those starting guard spots?
Guard's going to be – I mean, when you're talking about position battles, Auburn's got at least a half dozen guys that could be competing there at the guard spot. I mean, you know, Cole Best is going to be your center.
Mm-hmm.
And then Derek Plaza is a guy that I thought really shined, stepped up this spring, and has an opportunity – to be a starter, but it's not guaranteed. I mean, you mentioned Cole Skinner. You've got a couple of other transfers. You've got a couple of returnees. I mean, Auburn only had three guys coming back, two of them, Ty Buster and Jacoby Ward.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be possibilities in there as well. So, I mean, there are quite a few guys battling, really battling for the starting guard spots.
Yeah, it's one of those where that is the position battle, like, in that group. And you know, I think Stanton Ramil is the first domino that you need to see the way it falls. But regardless of how it goes, it's just there are so many options. And even those young guys, I know, like, Golish has mentioned both, I think, Wilson Zaire and Parker Pritchett as potential options of, I don't know about starting, but contributors this year. And they're both true freshmen. So that could be a group that I just think that group could look so many different ways this year. And even by way of that, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that if it doesn't look the way it was anticipated this offseason, you're going to necessarily see a major drop off. Like, I think there's a bunch of ways that you could attack it at the end of the day. So that to me, just bar none, like, that's the group. Stanton's the player. Like, that's 1A in both spots.
Well, I mean, if you're going to run the ball the way Alex Golish wants to run the ball, your offensive line needs to be cohesive. They need to be solid, at least. I mean, I'm not saying they have to be the best offensive line of the league because you've got a Byron Brown at quarterback. I mean, that's going to help your offensive line, especially in the running game. And I think they've got quite a few guys that look like they could be road graders.
Yes. I think they've there are a lot of guys that I look at. I mean, like Joe Simmons too, and we're talking about this guy being at one of these tackle spots. Like, I always felt this way about Jeremiah Wright, like last year, because mm-hmm. that was just the thing with him, was you'd go back and rewatch the game or look at it, and it's just like every once in a while there was just a block on a run play that was ridiculous. And so I think you've got guys who are of that mold. And I think, too, like the tempo piece of this offense, clearly that's going to have an impact, especially up front. But with that commitment to the run game, you know, the one thing that we didn't see much of the last 3 years, I'm not even going to say that we didn't see much of the run game. I don't feel like we saw much of a commitment to it.
Yeah, you didn't see enough of the run game last year is what
right.
I felt.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt Auburn much better served running the ball at times than airing it out like they did.
Absolutely. And I think what happens just in general when you fall into that is the predictability piece, and suddenly, like, you're not, how can you expect an offensive line to really go out there and get the job done when guys are more prone to just pin their ears back on principle to go after the passer? Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to have, your offensive line's going to benefit from what we'd anticipate being the, you know, the ratio, the run pass ratio of this offense.
What's the word that Alex Golish used a ton in Tampa? Identity.
Yes.
And that needs to be the identity, and that's what you expect it to be, the identity of this team.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean the adjectives that went into that, being physical, violent. I mean, I tend to immediately, the image in my head is the defense when you think of physicality and violence. But when you think of physical and violent offense, you think of the offensive line. So, you know, if they can figure that out and get those guys in the right place, like, I really think it's they're gonna have, I think, the benefit of this offense, even with the tempo of it. I think it will do a lot for them, especially compared to what we've seen in years past.
334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We're just a quarter of the way into hour number two. We'll get to our first break and get to your phone calls when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
War Eagle. It's like, okay, we're even getting down to, you know, that's the tempo question's been asked. I think it was asked mm-hmm. of Golish at the main podium, and
right.
quite frankly, like, I thought that was a pretty darn good answer, because it was more a question of, okay, how is that gonna, like,
affect,
I think,
the,
it was,
defense?
Yes, and yeah. he was like, it's the best thing for him, you know, because we're.
I'd never really thought of it mm-hmm. in that way, but it makes perfect sense.
Yes,
that if your guys are ready to face you and you have the fastest offense, they're going to be able to face anybody, because there's no question it's easier to slow down
mm-hmm.
than it is to speed up.
Absolutely. And so, like, I remember that being a question early on when Golish got hired, and, you know, I think it only got asked so much, but to hear that there is a, you know, still the same sort of intentionality we've seen behind, you know, even just an aspect like that. And I know, you know, I mean, the X's and O's of this sport, like, when you get into the nitty gritty of that stuff, like on the player and coach level, it is fascinating just hearing mm-hmm. these guys talk about it. Like a guy like Cole Best, I can't even imagine the amount of responsibility he has in terms of, you know, just like pre-play, like check downs, identifying, you know, blitzes and things like that. It's it gets so dang nuanced. But to, you know, to hear that there's that level of intentionality, especially after, like you said, I mean, what we've seen the last few years, I hope it's as much of a breath of fresh air as it has sounded, you know.
Yeah, and there's, I really, we can get to this in a little bit. I mean, I don't see there being a huge drop off defensively.
Yeah, me neither. And that's, you know,
I mean, look, the Auburn defense has been left out to been hung out to dry and been out there on the field. You know, when you think about how are they going to handle an up tempo offense? Well, if you score, mm-hmm. you're a whole lot better, because Auburn's defense has been back on the field way too much over the last couple of years without being up tempo.
That's a really good point. And like the thing, you know, you were asking about like position battles and things like that. To me, with this defense, and I think you could probably make the statement in a blanket sense for a lot of the position battles this year. But when I look at the defense, it's not like, you know, it's not like there's these super intense kind of like cutthroat battles. It's, you have the pieces. You've just got to figure out who is going
right.
to rise to it and take over that, you know, that starting spot or be that piece you need. But, you know, it's obviously it's easy to talk about the new, and we've talked a lot about the new, but, you know, this defense, I think, is in a similar circumstance of just the familiarity and the fact that you returned, like, so much of your retention this offseason was on that side of the ball. And mm-hmm. I mean, even, you know, it's like Lane Kiffin gets asked about Auburn at the podium in Tampa, and I know he's trying to talk about anything other than his offseason, but the first thing he mentions is, you know, the fact that they retained DJ Durkin, like, that is significant. That team, I am expecting them to be very improved in large part because of that. Like, this defense, you know, we talked about it last year, and it was, I think, a good, serviceable defense. Like, it got the job done, but you really have a genuine chance to me to take a leap of going from, yeah, this is a capable SEC defense that can help us win games, to this is an elite defense that can not only help us win games, but be one of the best in the country this year. You know, you got a few pieces to figure out, but I really think that's a genuine possibility for this defense.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. All right, 29 minutes away from 6 o'clock, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll talk about some of the other positions and the battles there here in the final half hour. Love to hear from you. Anything on your mind sports-wise, 334-321-1390 as we continue final half hour of the Wednesday Drive. Close didn't matter. We weren't, you know, it wasn't mm-hmm. horseshoes last year. I mean, yeah. one in seven in close games doesn't matter. I mean, that just frustrates you more and more when you keep losing those games
I heard you guys were talking about that tackle. As long as he stays healthy, you know, I got a question. Have they passed their physicals? Can they hear?
Oh, that's a very good question. We have not heard anything about any hearing issues a la Xavier Chaplin as last year, but that's something to be on the lookout for. I guess keep our ears peeled.
Man, did you see? I saw Xavier on one list of mm-hmm. the top 10 transfers for this year.
He's
a big, impressive looking question.
I really, like, you know, I feel like the struggles of that unit and some of those individuals last year, as much as that came to light, I always saw that more as an indictment of whether you want to, you know, I'm pointing a finger here, I guess, but whether it was the offense as a whole, the way it was called, Hugh Freeze, like, they had talent. Like,
I thought last year it was really a shame. I thought that was an offensive line that was built to run block, and they tried to pass pro way too much.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine who I've known for a long time, and he had worked in, like, NFL scouting and personnel evaluation for a long, long time, and was last year, and we were catching up during the season, and I was just like, hey, you saw the thing Freeze said about, you know, having 5 to 6 capable O linemen? And he was like, yeah. I was like, is that, you know, like, NFL caliber guys, like, do you see that too? Like, I can see the argument. And he's like, yeah, no, he's like, this could go down as one of the, like, most talented 5-7 teams ever. Like, they're going to have some guys drafted this year if they don't go into the portal and go elsewhere. Like, there's talent there. Like, that's not, you know, there's nothing deceiving you. Like, there is talent. So, you know, I'm not shocked that that's where Xavier Chaplin was ranked. I'm not shocked he wound up at Florida State either. And I'm not going to be shocked if he has a really good year.
Well, I got one question, Phil, before I go. Bill's Dan Peck coming back Friday?
He said he was going to try to be in the studio Friday, yeah. I mean, that doesn't mean, you know, he's still got his full-time gig in Montgomery, but hopefully he'll be able to be with us on most Fridays.
Well, I never thought I'd say this, but actually I've missed it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we all have.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, I got to go. I'll talk to you later.
Good hearing from you, Spectre. 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline. Yeah, and I agree with you, Adam. I mean, I felt that, you know, the last couple of years, Auburn should have been better. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. It's not that Auburn was just completely devoid of talent, mm-hmm. and that's why. And they played. And look, I'm not saying they didn't play hard, mm-hmm. because they did.
Yeah.
They played hard, and they nearly won quite a few ball games, but it wasn't because of a lack of talent.
Yeah, no, and that I think that made the Freeze tenure, like, that was the most hair-pulling part of it.
Yes.
Was, you know, he recruited very well, especially those first 2 years, and, you know, the portal, like, I mean, you know, I think about a guy like Keandre Lambert-Smith, like, going out and getting that guy in the spring period and having him be that kind of contributor. Like,
right.
The talent was always there. It was never a question of that. It was just – I mean, by the end of it, it boiled down to a point where you're looking at, what, 10-3 Kentucky, and it's like, okay, what are they doing on game days?
Right.
Like, what is the plan here? What? Because I don't see it. I don't see it at all.
No, and I mentioned Xavier. Today, golly, whose projections were there for the 12 playoff teams this year? And you know who was number 12?
Florida State?
No, UNLV.
Yep.
With Jackson Arnold at quarterback for Dan Mullen.
Okay. Another thing I'm not going to be shocked about. If he's Mountain West Offensive Player of the Year this year, I don't know if they have a Comeback Player of the Year. I'm not going to be shocked in the slightest.
Or Rookie of the Year or whatever.
Yeah, Rookie of the Year. This is a guy who's always been capable. I mean, you talk to him, you know, got to know his parents a little bit last year, and it's like, this is one of those kids who very, you know, in the same sense of an Ike Irish or a Jackson Koivin, you know, the story isn't on paper maybe interesting, and it's not necessarily interesting because this is a guy who's been built in a lab for this stuff. It's mm-hmm. not that he doesn't have the talent and the capability, you know. Obviously, things happened at Oklahoma, and I don't doubt that he needed a reset, but come here and you've got, you know, former five-star national Gatorade Player of the Year, and you can't do anything with that.
It's just baffling.
The book, I hope there's a book someday mm-hmm. that just gets to the bottom of those 3 years, because I think it's, you know, as much as Hugh Freeze's backstory obviously is just, there's a lot of off the field stuff that is, I guess you'd say, tabloidy. Like, I think the inside story of those 3 years would just be fascinating.
I agree. I agree 100%. 334-321-1390. Right back to the Drive hotline, and Tommy is up next. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Confused about something. I saw an article this morning that said the NCAA has suspended a Tennessee linebacker for 2 games.
Yes.
For taking a $437 accepting airline ticket.
Right.
What are they thinking?
So that's actually Adam Sparks. We work in the same network. He works for the newspaper in Knoxville, but he was the one who broke that story this morning. And from what I read of what he understood, the NCAA made that designation because
that's an illegal benefit.
Because it came from, I think, an agent, like a professional agent. Whereas, you know, had this been, you know, built in through NIL, like it would have been like, oh, you're doing a pre-draft workout with NIL money. You're still an amateur. But that is the discrepancy, I guess, they're hanging their hat on. So, yeah, it's
it does seem ludicrous, though, doesn't
pretty
it?
Pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
Pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It just totally confused me. That can make hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions, and then to take a $400 plane ticket from the age, I don't know. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it could have been handled where it was nothing at all, as Adam was saying. It's going to cost the young man 2 games.
I guess that'll stand. I mean, is there an appeal?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I don't know if we'll be getting another district judge involved or trying to find an injunction.
This one's a little different mm-hmm. because there are precedents mm-hmm. for the NCAA handing down suspensions for these type things, even though most of them predate NIL and the money that the players are getting now.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot. Love you.
Crazy stuff, but you're absolutely right about that, Tommy. I mean,
yeah, I just don't. And it's to me, it's like whenever the NCAA hands something down in that way, I'm just
why?
Yes, that is my prevailing thought.
Why? Yes.
Like, this is the one that you decided to do something about? Oh, like, okay, why not?
Well, I guess because they feel like this one will stand.
I guess.
I don't know.
I guess.
I don't know. And then you now have you also have where since we're talking about things that could be in court, something that is in court. Ole Miss suing LSU, suing a couple of their former players who are now at LSU, looking to get back, I guess, the money that they had paid those players to stay at Ole Miss.
And so, like, to clarify, because I admittedly have not, I saw the headline. Are they looking for a buyout, or is it recouping the money that they paid them?
They're suing them for breach of contract, but I don't see exactly what. All right. A story that I see from this afternoon, Andy Staples wrote, mm-hmm. Ole Miss has filed breach of contract suits against Devin Harper and Princewell. Now,
it starts with a U.
Yeah. Yamani Lehman, Malin. Well, I mean, I know who he is.
Yes.
I've seen his name. But both these players are at LSU now. But they claim the players owe termination fees after signing new deals with Ole Miss in January and then following Lane Kiffin to LSU. And so they're looking for compensation, termination fees. Apparently they signed agreements that said if they left, they would owe something. So they're looking for what they say they were owed.
And
for
like
leaving.
In a general concept sense, buyouts, I don't think it's unreasonable. Now, if you stipulate there's some buyout that's worth like some kid's entire NIL contract, like, okay, maybe we need to figure that one out a little bit. But it's, that one to me, I wonder what the actual financial amount is going to wind up being if it goes through.
Here's what it says. Andy Staples says that it was $550,000 for the edge rusher and $400,000 for Harper. So it's nearly $1 million.
Yeah, like that's pretty steep. You know,
Again, the players signed those agreements.
Right. Right. And the representation thing, that's the one I always go back to, and I don't want to beat my dead horse too much on that topic, but that is the most frustrating thing to me, is I wonder if there had been an adult in the room who was actually representing them from some sort of legitimate agency background. I guess I shouldn't assume that those kids, you know, that they're not through a legit agent, so to speak, but I wonder about that, I guess is what I should be saying, you know? Where was the adult in the room who was like, well,
yeah,
you know, that's
was there.
That's pretty steep.
Yeah, no kidding. So I mean, look, let's face it, Ole Miss is they're mad about Lane, mm-hmm. and so they're going to do whatever they can. I mean, if they can get anything from the LSU isn't going to pay.
Yeah.
I mean, LSU's not going to pay it.
Yeah.
And I doubt that I'd be highly surprised if the players have it.
Yeah.
To pay back.
Yeah. No.
To pay. I mean, because they didn't get that. That was just if they left, they would owe this.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting one to follow.
And I wonder, I mean, this is something that, I mean, since we don't have contracts.
Right.
I'm wondering if this is something that more schools will try to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Ole Miss is successful in getting anything, or I don't know that they will, though.
I wonder what we're going to see as people report this out, like as far as the documents, because surely, like, I mean, with this being a court case now, like, are those contracts going to become public record in a sense with this case?
And I wouldn't be stunned if the players say, I didn't know I was signing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I could totally see that as well. Man, that one's. Good Lord. Two different spectrums of the. Man, this is kind of ridiculous,
yeah,
right now.
Indeed. Let's get practice started and hopefully have some real news as we head up toward the season. Just a few days until that will happen, and we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Got a few minutes left when we come back, so stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Mountain High Outfitter,
ESPN 106.7, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes here on this Wednesday. Really didn't get into a lot of the other position battles. We can do that as we go along. There'll still be a little time. I mean, next week when we're on, Auburn will have gone through its first practice. We will have been able to watch that. We were just talking there during the break, though, that a position that I think we both feel can be quite the strength for Auburn if DeMarcus Riddick is healthy,
mm-hmm.
the linebacker room has a chance to be so, so special.
And that's the thing to me that is fascinating about it is I do think, like, DeMarcus does come with a caveat, but I don't necessarily think what that position does for you this year entirely depends on his health.
It just has a chance to be even,
right.
even better.
I think it could be your best position even if he is not at full health in mm-hmm. terms of what you have there. But, you know, we were talking about it, and I think even though they're different players, especially in terms of their, like, build and frame, I think him and Xavier Atkins, just in terms of their strengths, are so similar. And to think about having two guys in that room – who are just phenomenal in pursuit, phenomenal at creating havoc, especially in the backfield. Like, what that does for the defense as a whole in that room, like the jump from being very good, maybe your best position, to being like maybe your best position, and I mean, great feels like an understatement, but the ceiling of that room with him at full health is just ridiculous to think about.
Oh, when you add in the true sophomores in Juice Diaz and
Elijah Melendez,
yeah, Elijah
too.
Melendez.
Like, and he that is one thing I don't, you know, I think the last time I really felt like I saw, you know, something Auburn related, Auburn sports related swirling on social media was during the run to the Final Four. I started getting like highlight reel, like hype edits of Tahad Pettiford on my TikTok page for some reason. One thing that I've seen people posting about is Elijah Melendez has managed to bulk up like even more.
Goodness. Yeah,
this
no
offseason.
Kidding.
I mean, seriously, like just absolutely massive. You know, he didn't really look like a freshman last year, and he's not going to look like a sophomore year by any means. But that is, I think that might be the most exciting position group you've got this year. Really, you know, I think that and the running backs are exciting, but they're exciting on a whole different notion.
Safeties,
you know?
are pretty exciting. That's mm-hmm. one where I think you were sort of talking about them when you were talking about a group where it's not that cutthroat battle or things like that, but it's like you've got so many guys that could, mm-hmm. you know, step out there as starters.
Mm-hmm. You've got, I mean, Champ Anthony, you know, a full season of health for him, that would just be massive. And then, you know, I feel like the first two names you tend to think about are new boy Fagans and Eric Winters. And
yeah, but you've got Sly.
Right.
And
Caleb Harris is just reliable as ever.
And Jacoby Matthews.
Jacoby's another really interesting one. This whole defense, you got options.
Yep.
So many options.
No question. Adam, it's always great having you in. Once again, let folks know how they can follow you and keep up with everything you're doing.
Absolutely. If you're looking to go straight to the source, just head to montgomeryadvertiser.com, click sports at the top, and then wherever you first see it, click Auburn, and you'll have everything you need. And if you're looking for me, whether that's on Twitter, TikTok, anywhere on social media, just search at Cole Reporter. That's my last name, Cole, and the word reporter.
Outstanding. Appreciate you being in and looking forward to it. Next week, we'll be able to actually talk about practice.
There we go.
That's going to wrap things up for the Wednesday drive. Justin Ferguson back in tomorrow from the Auburn Observer. So looking forward to him being in and talking with you. But that's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.